Well, my son, maybe there is something in a name. 5. I am known by another name in those spheres which are above that temple. But in those below I am called by the name Arnal. That you may call me also, if it pleases you better, my son. My mother told me of one named Arnal. 6. There is no earth letter schemes to cover heavenly names, and translate them into earth phrases. I am he of whom your mother told you, write it with one or other letter, as you will. It will suffice that you know me by that name. Will that please you? Shall I say commend me to you, my son? That's a knock for me, sir. Well, I can take it. Aye, you can take it, for you have taken harder before now, and not so kindly meant. So now, good night. As strange a sound on these lips of mine which never breathe night air as my name shall be on yours, Arnal. The Temple of the Holy Mount, its aspect and plan. Friday, February 8, 1918. I have told you of the use of the Temple of the Holy Mount. I now give you some account of the structure itself, but not in detail, for that is not possible. A sheer edifice rises above the grasslands, and on the tableland above stands the temple. That portion of it viewed from the plain below is but one small wing, and not the main building. A multitude there assembled, and looking up, sees the porch and the flanking arches of the wing which fronts that way. From its lofty position, its size and its proportional elements of architecture, it is, as thus viewed, both stately and beautiful. Entering by this porch, and passing through it, we turn to the right, and skirt an open-air colonnade, roofed but with no side walls to it, which runs right round the main building, and at a distance from it, but is broken at intervals where corridors pass across, on the left leading towards the central temple, and to our right leading to other detached wings with their porches. All these, however, front upon districts in Sphere 11, and only that one of which you already know looks towards Sphere 10. Those wings are each devoted to special use, and are in number 10. This number is not a reference to the 10 spheres below, but to those which are in advance. Does this number include the porch fronting on the 10th sphere? No, that is of itself alone, and has reference only to those spheres below. These 10 have reference to the 11th and higher spheres. In each wing is a great hall, and the wings are not identical in shape, no two are alike. In a way which you would not understand, each of these halls is tinctured with the elements of the sphere to which it has reference, and is also in communion with that sphere. It is here that messages are received from those spheres, and transcribed into the language of Sphere 11, and dealt with there, or are sent out to whatever district they concern. Also, when companies of temple dwellers go forth into those spheres above, touch is always maintained with them in these wings, and, as they pass from one sphere to another, so is the link taken up by the wing in touch with that sphere into which their journey has taken them. We turn to the left down one of these corridors bisecting the circular colonnade. It passes through courtyards and gardens and woods, all beautifully kept, and containing fountains, statuary, lakes, paths of varicolored marbles, arbors, temples, some in replica of temples in far spheres, but not on so grand a scale. And at length we come to the main group of buildings. These also have 10 porches, but they do not give on to the corridors, but are each about equidistant between two corridors, as these end upon the wall of the main group. The porches stand out into those sections of the grounds which lie each between two of the corridors, and are far stretching. On earth you would call each of these sections a park, for the temple is very vast in area, and the colony of temple dwellers number many thousands, yet each has plenty of room, both in house and gardens. We will pause before the porch which is set between the wings of spheres 12 and 13. They are not so numbered here, but I call them so to avoid your confusion. There is a broad terrace here, running on each side of the porch, passing high above the beautiful grounds which stretch away towards the mountains which stand sentinel afar on the horizon and which mark the boundary proper of Sphere 11, for the temple is built merely in the outlands of that sphere. The porch breaks into the terrace, and projects it into the square, from which ascent is given by steps of dazzling amber, with a light within itself glowing and meeting the light from without in a blend which changes according to the personality of those who be ascending the steps at the time. Here you will remember, all which you would call dead or inanimate is responsive to everything else. Stone is affected by, and does also affect, vegetation and trees. Trees are affected by the presence of people, according to the nature both of people and trees. So is it with houses and all buildings. The porch itself is of much beauty. It is not rounded nor squared, but of a shape you cannot imagine. If I should say it is not so much a shape as a sentiment, you would think I spoke in allegory. Yet it is permanent with a permanency more perfect than that of any earth building. Call it mother of pearl, or liquid glass, in substance, and that must suffice. Passing within we come on a large oblong space, covered with a roof of trellis work interwoven with plants and flowers, some of which have their roots outside in the grounds, and some are planted within. But I must hurry on. We enter at last the great hall of the temple. Is it that in which you saw the Christ on the return from your journey? The same. It has no roof, such as you would say was a roof. Yet it is not open to space. The arches tower high and majestically up into the place where the roof would be, and are supported on pillars of multicolored crystal. But their arches end in a running line upon which rests what has the appearance of a cloud of light, but light of such a quality as to be impenetrable by those who, for the most part, assemble there. The roof cloud is not ever of one tint, but changes according to the manner of ceremony proceeding below in the hall. I have already told you of the altar, and of the throne room behind it. Round the sides of the hall are other rooms such as that. One is a robing room. Now that may sound very earth-like, but I will tell you that the robing which is there enacted is not merely the changing of a coat or cloak, but a ceremony of a most momentous kind. Let me explain. There are at times transactions enacted in the great hall which are full of electric power from spheres much advanced. At such times it is necessary that those from the sphere 11, or any sphere below that from which the influence comes, be so conditioned that the life stream be received upon his body so it be to his benefit and not to his hurt. So the ceremony of this robing is diligently carried through in the robing room, where they are very carefully treated by those expert in holiness and power, so that their garments change to the requisite hue and texture and shape. This is achieved only through the personality of the wearer. The inner qualities of him are denoted by the aspect of his robes. Only in this way may one safely enter that hall and take part in the ceremony. It may be that there is on hand the commission of a band on service into other spheres' dismissal ceremony. At such time the assembly meet to give of the combined influence of their strength to those thus sent forth. It is therefore required that all be done so that the harmony of the blend be perfect. Those of less estate, or newcomers, have, to this end, to undergo very careful attunement in the robing room, and then even they may lend of their mite of profit to the missioners. Or a manifestation shall perhaps be on hand. It may be a manifestation of some aspect of the Godhead, or of some very high one, or of the Christ himself. Then such robing is most carefully done, or harm, and not good, would ensue. But I have never heard of a mistake having been made in this matter, although, in theory most certainly it is possible. Frequently, however, the more recent comers find themselves weakening as they approach the hall, when the presence of some very powerful person or some other intense influence suffuses it. Then they return on that occasion. It is a test, and by it they get at what is required in their training. So they are not without blessing also. If you go towards the mountains and view the temple from some hillside, it will appear like a city, with its multitude of towers and archways and domes and trees and park lands. And the sight is most beautiful because of the gems which gleam out of its midst and shine afar. For each dome or pinnacle is a gem-like structure glowing and flashing with heavenly light and language for each item of the building, and every color and group of colors or of gems has a meaning which can be read by those who dwell there. They themselves are not less lovely as they move to and fro about those porticos, or upon the balconies or roofs of the buildings, or in the parks. They mingle with the other beauties and glories of the place, and add to its peace, as to its splendor. for they and the temple are each part of the other, or, as I have said before, responsive, so that no unharmony is there, but all is in perfect poise of grouping and of color. And if I were asked to give that temple city a name in one word, I would call it the Kingdom of Harmony, for therein is perfect unison of sound and color and shape and the temperament of those who abide there. Arnal. And next headline is. And next headline is. Chapter 2. Twin Spirits: A Dismissal Ceremony. Monday, February 11, 1918. And now, my son, I would like you to give me your mind while I try to outline for you one of those incidents in the temple which I have called by the name Dismissal Service and Manifestation, for this was both. Converging on the central hall were streams of happy people who came from all parts of the sphere at the call of the master of the temple. They were happy, but very thoughtful, for they were aware that a very impressive ceremony was about to take place, and so came in such a mind as that they might take away with them so much as possible for the furtherance of their progress. For these manifestations are of mystical and sacramental nature, and we are much exercised in rising to meet those high influences which come from the spheres superior so that we may interpret the meaning of the ceremony, and thus come at what blessing it is intended to impart. When they were all assembled within, I looked up to the roof cloud and saw that its color was changing. When I had entered, it had been gold with streaks of blue. Now it was absorbing and blending such hues as the multitude brought with them, and, as more arrived, so the living moving vapor changed its color, until, when all were assembled, it was a deep tone of crimson velvet. That is as near as I can come at it with your colors of earth. But its aspect told me that it was also touched by powers of higher grade from above and that some presence was at hand already. Then there descended from this roof cloud a mist, distilled from its own essence, and settled upon us with a sense of sweet odors and of music whispers and brought into us a glow of exaltation and peace which uplifted one and all in harmonious blending so that we became, not so much a multitude of individuals as an assembly of those cellular entities which go to make up the one body of a man, so much at one in sympathy of love and purpose were we. Then we saw that before the open way into the throne room a cloud was condensing upon itself and taking shape. Now, so far as is possible, I will tell of this transaction, but you should note that, if you were to describe it again to one of my fellows of this sphere, while he would recognize that incident you had in your mind to show him, yet he would say that such a description was not a true one, by reason both of mission, and also of the quite inadequate names given to what things you would tell him were seen and heard there. The cloud was of green tint streaked with spirals of amber within itself, and capped with a canopy of blue. This cloud was continuously in motion, and at length grew into the shape of a stately pavilion whose roof was of the deepest blue-violet and the pillars of semi-transparent green and amber. There were in all seven pillars round the sides and back of the semicircular shape, and also two on each side of the main opening in front. These last two were of deep violet, with spiral bands of crimson edged with white. All were pulsing with the life of those who were willing this gem of beauty into being, and from the structure proceeded a murmur of melody most lovely to feel, for we did not so much hear it as feel it. It is often more real to feel sound here than it is with you to hear it. Then beneath the canopy, and in the midst of the pillars, there appeared a wheel chariot with the rear of it towards us. We could see the heads and quarters of those five beautiful horses above the front board of it as they tossed their heads and exulted at their presence in the high drama in which they were playing their part. They were of faint gold color, and their manes and tails were of deeper gold. Very beautiful they were, and their satin coats gleamed and almost reflected the colors of the pavilion. Then within the chariot there emerged into our sight a beautiful young woman. She was facing us, and I noted all her loveliness, and, as I looked upon her, I saw nothing else except her exceeding beauty. Her body was of a tint you do not know. I will call it amber, but it was not the same tone as the amber of the pillars, but of more radiance and transparency, and yet with an aspect of reality and permanency which those lacked. She wore a robe of blue gossamer, but where it covered her body the two hues blended and became a delicate green. On her arms were bands of purple metal, and on her wrists bands of ruby-colored metal. She wore upon her hair a small cap of deep red with a thin band of white and gold, and her hair was brown with a sheen of orange upon it, as if it were touched by a ray of the sun at setting time, and her eyes were deep purple and blue. Now as we looked upon that picture we, one and all, felt that this queen from the high places of the heavenly realm was a mistress of. I am now at a loss, my son, I am keen to tell you what she meant to us, what she was in reality in her own home, and I cannot find words of such meaning as to be of use. Pause a moment, friend, and I will continue. Now take down these words, Mother Queen, maidenhood, a spirit brooding over a race of people and bringing it forth into its own self-realization as a power for progress and good, one who, by eloquence of speech, strikes shame into a people dormant and not progressive, and, at the risk of tumult and frenzy, stirs up that people into activity, while over all she sheds a sense of far eternities realized and present, when all shall blend into, and be absorbed in a majesty of peace, fearlessness and purity, where no shame can come of nakedness, and the lure of beauty is all towards holiness and pity and love. Roll all these into one word, Queen, and you have all I can give you of what that vision was to us in its message. Then she turned and touched the two horses nearest her, each one lightly with her hand, and they swept round and faced the multitude. Then there came down from the gallery at the opposite end of the hall a young man, who walked up the middle gangway and stood before the pavilion. She smiled upon him, and he went to the rear of the chariot and mounted and stood beside her, and they two took each of the other's beauty, and gave back, each to other, an added measure of comeliness, as they stood the responsive, heart calling to heart in love and holy aspiration. Could you describe the young man, sir? He was the woman in masculine duplicate. One was the complement and counterpart of the other. In only one thing did he seem dissimilar. His robe was of a slightly ruddier tint. I did not notice anything else of significance to mark one from the other. Even sex was expressed rather in spirit than bodily. Although, in form she was emphatically woman, and he man. But to their purpose. They had come to head a company of those who had been prepared in that temple and its environs and lead them forth on an enterprise of a large conception, and requiring much ability and power for its furtherance. This was that they should make their way to a planet which was just at that stage of evolution where intellect was beginning to realize itself, and to raise itself into a distinct order out of the brute towards the man, but it would not eventuate in man such as the Earth type is, but not very dissimilar, and in essentials identical. This company was to take up the work of guidance in the progress of this race just at this stage. They would not take over their task in its entirety, nor at once. This was to be their first visit to those high creative princes who had brought the planet to its present stage. They would return, from time to time, here for rest and counsel. They would return in part, leaving some of their number to carry on the work, to be relieved by others of them after rest, and so gradually the affairs of that planet would be gathered up entirely into their hands, the while, in this sphere and some other spheres, other bands supplementary are being trained to join them when the time shall be that the race is expanding and evolving to what stage shall require more numerous guardians and ministers at the helm of that ship as it sails the broad spaces of the heavens on its way from mist to substance, and to living creatures, and to intelligence, and, as I will say for you of Earth, from animality, through human sort, to Godhead. This band, which were to receive our good wishes presently, were about to take their first trial, not of creative enterprise that would follow in some eternity ahead, but in that phase which should lead them to the borders of creative service, the development of life already created into new forms of being, which in itself is creative in principle, and in reality is a department of the lesser creations, but not of creation new and radical. Note you, my son, that in this manifestation of those two high spirits, the woman came first into the chariot, in order of sequence, and the man came later. For motherhood is principal in this empire of theirs, and yet the two stand together and start together, abreast and equal. That is a mystery, how two may be one principal, the other second, and both equal in unity. It is so, but I will leave it there, and you may think about it, you will feel the truth of it rather than reason it to be so, I think. Then forward came those chosen for that solemn dignity of conquest in the infinities of spatial realms so far and so deep into the darkness. Away there where matter is instead of spirit substance and environment. Ah, you little know what that means to us, to speed away from the light of the heavens into gross and ever grosser darkness toward the distant abyss of being where worlds are material, and where bodies, enshrining sparks of life of the same source as that by which we live, are material also. Yet we were once such as these. Strange, strange exceedingly, this, and yet here I and my own friends speak to you, yourself enmeshed in body material. But we see only your body spiritual, and to that we address ourselves. The little lady Kathleen, won by some strange witchery of her own, goes further and touches the physical brain of you. She is a hyphen, and a charming link between us. Well, I have now, at this time, no more to tell you. You have questions, I can see. Write them down, and, at our next meeting, we will give you an answer. Arnold. And next headline is Mary and Joseph, Their Origin and Development. Friday, February 15, 1918. Have you any more to tell me about the ceremony of which you spoke at our last sitting, Arnold? If so, my questions can wait, if that will suit you. As you will, my son. And yet there is a question you have written down which perhaps we would do well to answer here. Do you refer to this one, of what race were those two leaders in their earth life? The same. Now you must know that these two youthful angels were really very ancient in their origin, though be few who attained to their power and authority to use them in such a service as this who have not passed a very lengthy period of training and evolvement. These two were twin spirits. Two, they both lived in those times when Earth had not taken on its present condition of life, but when man was in that state of evolution to which the foremost race on that planet to which they were commissioned had attained. That period for Earth was a long one. During that period they both passed through that stage of dawning intelligence and came on into the spirit spheres. Their training was taken up here, and they, being two of the foremost and the most progressive of their race, were passed on from planet to planet, each more in advance of the last, until they came back to the Earth sphere and continued their progress there. At that time Earth had reached the rational stage, the phase of development when man had arrived as a human being such as he is today, but of lower capacity of intelligence. Bronze or Stone Age, or which? There was the Bronze Age, as you have named it, for some portions of the race, and the Iron Age for others, and the Stone Age for others. Man did not evolve with universal equality. You know this, and your question was a hasty one, my son. It was when Earth was progressing in intellect, and that is as exact as you can make it. It was long before Atlantis, or that other civilization which men call Lemuria. They came into the spheres near the Earth, and now, having accumulated much power, and also much knowledge, and being of high degree in holiness also, they made rapid advancement through these spheres, and passed beyond into the interplanetary spheres, and, as I believe, into those spheres which are interstellar. For I am of a mind to hazard that such as they are not entrusted with such work as this to which they had been sent except they be conversant with those high forces which unify the constellations in their orbits, responsive each to others. They did not find their affinity until they came back here, and then they were drawn together by natural gravitation of spiritual sympathy, and have since gone on their way, ascending together the stairs of the heavens of God. How did they come into contact with the other planets? By reincarnation. Reincarnation would imply a re-entry into flesh of the same nature and substance as they had previously worn. If this be so, and has a view acceptation, then the term reincarnation would not be competent to express their becoming condition to the material and outer manifestation of other planets than Earth. For although on some planets flesh is very like that of your Earth bodies, yet no two planets produce precisely the same material for habitation upon their surface, and on some worlds it is very dissimilar. Not only, therefore, would such an operation as you have in mind be no true reincarnation, but it would be, not perhaps directly contrary to the laws which govern interplanetary cosmogony, but certainly of so irregular a nature as to be viewed as unprofitable by those who have these matters under their authority to control the onward urge of the spheres. No, they visited those far worlds, both of this solar group and also of other groups as they did this Earth, and as I do now. I come back to Earth to reinforce my powers here, and I go to other planets, now and again, in like manner, seeking after greater knowledge of God and His wisdom in the creation and guiding of worlds. But I do not take upon me their material condition. That would but hinder me. I get to their inner life and the real state of them, the better from the inner, that is the spiritual side. From my standpoint in the spirit, I can learn more of what is going on upon that world than I could do were I to go out upon its surface incarnate, and with my senses engrossed by reason of their obligation to operate through a machine so much heavier and denser than that of the body of that ethereal substance which, in comparison, clothes the spirit lightly. Does this suffice to answer you in respect of their experience by the analogy of mine, my son? Thanks, sir, yes. I see what you mean, I think. Yes, you will remark that, while all creation is one, yet diversity goes a very long way into the exalted places of heavenly progress, and in unification only comes into operation far beyond the knowledge of us who, when we look ahead, feel how short a way we have come along the road from that time when we measured our progress day by day towards those sublime heights, expanded into infinitude, where the pendulum of the timepiece of God swings in eternity after eternity, and the rhythm of tune blends into one bar of harmony in the great orchestra of dynamic creation. This is the school in which I take my place on a lower form, just one removed from the probationary stage which I left on entering this my present sphere and the temple. Those two have progressed through this school in which I learn, and have now gone on to a higher. They return here, as you have seen, as teachers and leaders now of others in the way of training which they themselves once trod. I have been wanting to ask you their names, sir, but you hesitated in case I respond as once before. Well, they have no names that you could write down. Give them what names you will, my son, and those shall serve for their identity. I have not thought of it. Well, think, and tell me. It is better if you name them than I who know their names but may not transcribe them for you. They could not be put down in your letters. What will you call them then, my friend? Shall we say Mary and Joseph? My son, you have done what I think you do not fully understand of in its inner mystery. No, I do not disapprove. No, for those are the only two names in their significance which Earth history supplies which are in any degree fitting to call them by. I will not pursue this further. Let him that hath ears hear. By those names, therefore, we will call them in this account, Mary, Joseph. In that order you said them, in that order let them stand. Are you curious to observe that, my son, for it is of significance? There seems to be a great difficulty in the transmission of names, and also of dates of Earth periods. Everybody seems to find this so who receives messages from your spheres. Why is this, please? I think you confuse the matter a little, do you not, my son? Are you not now speaking of Earth names once owned, and of Earth periods once lived? Yes. Yes. Now, as to Earth names. These are remembered for a time after transition by death. But new names are given here, and are used constantly, to the exclusion of Earth names. This has the effect of the Earth name fading, becoming dim, and at last almost, or quite, vanishing from the memory. Not so much while relatives are still on the Earth, but after such time as they have all come over. Then, as generations go by, the line becomes intermixed with other blood, and the connection is thinned in ratio and at last is lost altogether. Exceptions there are, but few. Then, also, in the course of time names become changed, both in spelling and pronunciation. They become different names. But most of all they fade from memory as interest in the Earth period becomes of less account by its removal from the more immediate proximity of the present estate of a progressed spirit, and among the infinite variety of experience here it is forgotten. It can always be had by research of the records, but that is rarely worthwhile. The difficulty of remembering Earth periods is a similar one and as needless to our present concerns as to our future course, in which chiefly our interest lies. There is also the fact that the continuous receding of our Earth period and the intervention of event after event in so long a line of links, that it is difficult, on the moment, to pick out that particular link at the farther end and label it with the Earth time of day.